Welcome to another episode of Contract Heroes, the show where our guests, and sometimes us, provide best practice recommendations on all things related to contract management.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Contract Heroes. Well, we're not the heroes. Our guests are. And today we've got a great guest for you. It's somebody we've been trying to get on the show. We've been going back and forth for a while now. I want to welcome Craig Conte to the show. So, Craig, thanks for joining us. We're very excited to have you. And I think this is going to be a great episode. We're going to be talking about a lot. You have a ton of experience in the contract management space. So before we jump into some of the questions that we chatted about, we'd love to flip things over to you and just get a little bit more information on your background, where you're coming from, and you know, where you are now.
Great. No, thanks, Mark. Thanks, Pepe, for having me here. Sorry it took so long. I wish it was because I was traveling and going all around the world, but hopefully soon we'll all get to do that. But thanks again. Yeah, following you guys, have a great podcast, and you know, thanks. I'm just glad to be a member of it. So I'm Craig Conte. I'm a partner at Deloitte Legal here in the UK. I'm part of our legal management consulting, and I run the contract piece here for UK and Europe. I'm a lawyer by training, you know, so don't hold that against me. I'm from New Jersey. Feel free to hold that against me. I probably deserve it. And I practiced law in New York City for 10 years or so, you know, primarily contract, you know, so mostly outsourcing and IT law. You know, I remember the first dot-com bubble, so I can age myself appropriately now. And then made the exciting move into Capgemini, where I was the head lawyer for the BPO. And then went to our CFO and made the exciting question or great idea of, well, we have all these really complicated contracts. What are we, you know, who's watching these? Obviously, we're delivering and doing great stuff, but who's really watching? These things are like 1,000 pages long. He said, that's a great question. Why don't you go look into that? Which then led me into the world of helping Capgemini first go through its transformation to create legal and commercial shared services. So spent a lot of time in India, Poland, Guatemala, Brazil. All those are magical times of seeing great people, good food. And then, like all good things, we started selling this in and helping clients go through, you know, their area of, you know, whether it's outsourcing, whether it's technology solutions, transformations, and been in a few places. And now I'm here at Deloitte, where we're doing the same thing. So really happy to be here and excited to talk about contracts.
That's a great introduction, Craig, because I mean, there's a lot of points that we would like to go a little bit deeper, but we always love to open these interviews. In your opinion, like, why do you think that contracting process of every organization, not just like big ones, but every organization needs attention?
Oh, that's a great question. And look, I've been lucky. I've been able to work, you know, around the world. You know, South America did a lot of work in for a bit, U.S., Europe, and Asia as well. And I got to say this, like, you know, there's a lot of things that separate us, but there's a lot of things that bring us together. And contracts is one of them.
Right.
You know, very few companies actually make things anymore. What, you know, where the actual assets of a company are all in these pieces of paper. You know, we could say that, you know, they're buying and selling stuff, but it's all actually wrapped up in the contract. So, you know, contracts in organizations really are the lifeblood of it, the life essence, and everyone touches the contract, whether it's lawyers, commercial people, salespeople, procurement, finance, et cetera. It's touched by everyone, but owned by no one.
Right.
So there are very few companies, and even if they do, you know, have sort of a head of contracts, it's typically just a piece of it, maybe, you know, the creation of contracts or maybe a vendor management organization. But the whole life cycle of how you, you know, start a contract, pick a vendor, pick a partner, et cetera, sign it and do it, that's a very broken, you know, activity, or it's broken up into areas within companies. And you see the companies that really, when whether big, small, or just you, or two guys, right? If they're doing it right, they're usually, you know, it's very transparent. You know, they're not missing things. They're not having into mistakes. You know, they're not having, you know, big issues coming up with them. And they really can understand, you know, where their value is coming and going in their business, because that's, it's all in contracts. I know we could say it's in Excel, but it really is. All the value is in those words that we write, that, you know, lawyers and other people write up for you.
Right. I mean, it's what I like to say is that every company works under commercial relationship, even either if you're on the sales side or in the buying side. At the end, it's all about commercial relationship. And there's no other place with more details on those commercial relationships than in contracts. And the contracts can become, or they actually are, the manuals on how you have to handle those commercial relationships. What's going to happen when things don't go well? How can you start a claim? How, you know, it's like you have everything there. And most of the times, companies and people think about contracts like they're just like a 1,000 pieces of paper that once they negotiate for months and months and they spend a lot of money on lawyers, they just put it on files and cabinets, and they don't see them anymore unless something goes wrong, right? And and there's something that we have discussing with some other guests here in our podcast, because there's a big mistake that a lot of companies are doing, because there's a lot of new technology. Legal tech is becoming like, you know, like this buzzword that is everywhere, and contract lifecycle managers are everywhere, and companies are just like, we want that piece of software, right? But the thing is, like, there are things that you gotta take care before you jump into technology, right? And I would like to ask you, Craig, it's like, how can a company with no good contract management process implemented can take a first step?
Sure. No, that's an excellent question. You know, also a good observation about contracts. Just to jump back on that one, you know, the old way of doing contracts is right. People, like lawyers, would write about the divorce, not actually how to do the marriage, right? You know, how we're going to, you know, do things together. They're always worried about like whose rights are what, finger pointing. Luckily, that's changed. Change still. So your question about like, you know, where do you start, and you know, how can you get into this? Now, look, I'm going to say this. Look, I love technology. I think the technology is better than it's ever been, and every day it gets better and better. Right. And by us to say that, I think the technology has done. They've obviously put a lot of money into marketing, because if you go onto, you know, social media sites or whatnot, right, it's very clear that out there that everyone says you need technology, and you do.
Right.
But I've never seen technology just by itself solve a contract problem. It's literally, you know, think of the most basic technology. What good is a pen without the hand that uses it? You know, what good is a car? Those who are doing driverless cars, without someone to actually tell you where, you know, whether you're driving it or telling it where to go, what good is that? Same thing with the tools themselves. If you don't have a process, right? If you don't have a process, if you have also bad contracts, right? If you have the wrong people doing the job, if you have the wrong process for how things get done and the wrong content for doing it, the technology, you might as well just be putting water in a Ferrari, right? It's not going to work, because if you have a clunky contract that's written, like you said, Pepe, like, you know, you do this, you do this. It's, you know, very adversarial, and you put that into the best AI system or best workflow system, it's just going to gunk up the system, and you're not going to get any efficiencies from there.
It's like you have automating a broken process, it's not going to benefit anybody.
Yeah. Or if you have like processes where like, oh, how do we get contracts approved? Well, you know, we need 10 different approvals, you know, and it's co-signed like this for an NDA. Well, why? If you have a process that has too many approvals to it, you should be questioning, you know, well, what do I need a lawyer for? What do I need a commercial person for? What can the business do themselves? You know, there's a magical weird thing out there that, you know, most people can read. and surprise, surprise, if you explain to them, hey, look, let's do a deal and it's fair, and let's do this, it's relatively straightforward. You know, people can do that. You know, I know we like to think that lawyers invented everything, but legal systems haven't been around that long. You know, humans started first. The Babylonians didn't have lawyers.
Yeah, right. And I think that that's another thing, right? Not just the processes, but also like the content of the contracts, because most of the time the contracts are drafted by lawyers for lawyers. And at the end, the people that are actually using the contracts and taking advantage of what it's the content of the contracts is people in the commercial departments, the sales department, or the procurement department. And if you write a contract with each clause with, you know, like these huge paragraphs, and they don't understand anything of the contracts, of course, they're going to ask all the time that the lawyers to try to explain what's inside that contract. And if you depend on a lawyer for every time you need to take a step, then of course, it's going to take a lot of time more in all the negotiations.
Right. No, exactly. And look, and lawyers are terrific, right? You know, highly educated, you know, great people in terms of, you know, doing hypotheticals and stuff. But as you said before, right, these documents are business relationships, right?
Right.
Business relationships in there that, you know, someone in procurement, someone in operations, someone in sales has to do and deliver on, right? The lawyer, he or she gets to go home, right? And not necessarily deliver on this or have to live with the implications of, you know, what the contract says. And then if someone at 12 o'clock at night on a Saturday has to figure out, oh, gee, what happens if, you know, this SLA, is it met? You know, do we have to stop? Do we have to bring in another company? Ah, you know, that's not useful. It has to be very clear and written for the people who actually have to live in it. Now, I think that's changing. I think now, you know, a lot of lawyers are getting this, a lot of law firms, a lot of folks are writing it better. But look, dinosaurs still walk the earth. There's still a lot of that out there that you would not say. It's still a lot of 1990s or 1980s version of contracting out there, as opposed to, you know, what we've all lived through. We just lived through, or we're still living through in some ways, right? The largest force majeure event of our lives.
Right.
You know, if you're hiding behind that and not trying to figure out, well, gee, how are we going to do business where we can't travel or we can't see each other, we can't do stuff, you know, you have to make sure the contract is elastic enough to really be practical and not just saying, well, you couldn't deliver. Well, no one could deliver. you know that's not helpful. How do we figure out how business keeps going? And I think the people who write contracts that way are going to be doing a really good job for the future.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's interesting, right, Craig? And I, you know, I think something we always talk about again on the show is how, legal's usually a late adopter to technology and bringing in new tools to help them, right? I mean, they still use, you know, Microsoft Word and things like that, which isn't a bad thing. I think Microsoft does a great job of handling, you know, redlining, and some applications out there still allow lawyers to use Word to do the redlining because they know how much they enjoy doing it in that manner. Other you know, CLM applications do have their own native redlining functionality and inlining and stuff like that. But you know, I think something that's interesting that you said was, and touching on this still, is I know that Juro has recently came out with a new survey where they talked with a bunch of their customers. And I think it was something like 30% of lawyers now that are in-house are no longer using Microsoft Word. You know, they're using tools that are actually more collaborative and like things that the sales team is using, like, you know, the G Suite and things like that. I didn't know, you know, if in your experience, are you seeing any teams kind of making this transition as well? Or do you think that folks are still kind of sticking with what they know and trying to find other tools to integrate with?
Yeah, no, that's a great survey too that came out. I mean, I think it's a generational thing, just to be honest with you. I mean, I think, you know, look, the tried and true, right, of, you know, whether you're using, you know, Word, phone calls, you know, that gets the job done. And I think, you know, it's just opening their eyes and understanding how, you know, how and when this can be useful. Because it's a big change management issue, right? And like I said, like whether it's, you know, Google Docs or Microsoft or, you know, there's tons of great products out there and the CLM platforms themselves allow it. It's just getting people to realize that, hey, this is faster, right? This is better. Because the old way was, all right, this is version 1.5 of, you know, and then they're going to do version 1.6. It's just, you know, ping-ponging back and forth. That worked. We got contracts done. But there's ways that, you know, look, not every issue in a contract's contentious. You know, someone could be arguing about liability and payment terms over here and have negotiations going live in the contract here while someone's cleaning up the references to make sure that it's all Bob Smith, not, you know, Sally Smith or whatever. Right? Mm-hmm. There's things that can be done this way. I think, you know, companies, you know, whether it's consultancies or technology companies that can bridge that gap and say, look, this is faster to people. You know, business cases are built for companies. Right. You know, and companies see the value of it. Right. But an individual, right, just wants to get it done. So that way they go home at 5 o'clock on a Friday and don't have someone panicking that, you know, calling them, I need to get this contract done on Monday. Right. If there's a way to solve that problem so they can go see their kids' football game. Right. That's that's a great advantage. You know, and I think the companies that show that those collaboration platforms allow you more time to be flexible, to work from home, work from the office, work from, you know, the football stadium, right? Yeah. Those things that allow you to do that, that's the future.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely agree with that. And I think, you know, knowing, you know, your background in, you know, when you were at Capgemini and building out kind of this process from scratch, I mean, what do you think are the most valuable things to focus on at the beginning of this journey?
Well, I think that's a great question. I think it's, you know, it's the goal of what you want to do.
Okay.
Right. You know, because depending on the company that you are, right, are you doing contracting because your risk, right? Now, there could be companies, if you're certain countries and certain industries, right, that, you know, you can't allow a blemish on anything, right? You know, sometimes in financial institutions, et cetera, they have to be, you know, cleaner than clean, et cetera. So you're really doing this from a risk perspective. And what you're looking for is transparency and control. So transparency and control means I want to make sure this is automated throughout. I can see everything that's going. I have a perfect audit trail, right? So that's why I want to build a process that goes to that. If I'm in, you know, maybe I'm not doing life or death type contracting, right? Very few are, but, you know, if my goal is speed, right, then I want to find something that, you know, allows me, you know, and I don't have infinite amount of money to hire infinite contract people, but I do have lots of people who can read. And I want to, you know, my contracts, maybe they're all under 10,000 or 100,000, whatever number makes sense. And you're not really worried about the risks as much. You know, I want to get speed. I want to develop a system and a process. And I need a tool that helps me energize my staff, right, to go do contracts themselves. Now, back when we all were allowed to fly, right. You know, the airlines came up with a great thing. They use their phones and I can check in, I can check my bag, I can do everything, I can change my flight all from a phone. I don't have to talk to people. Right. You know, before that, you know, there used to be a situation where you had to go to a desk and wait in a line and do this stuff. We got used to it. Same thing with contracting. You know, if your goal is speed and allowing the most number of people to do something, then that's the kind of solution you need, you know? So I think it's always about finding out what's the problem you want to solve? Because CLM, there's 250. Now I saw someone say there's 400 tools, you know, in the market, you know, doing something with CLM related. And you know, it's changing every day because they keep buying each other, you know? So they don't all do the same thing. There's sort of groupings, there's AI tools, there's drafting tools, there's post-award management tools, there's things that work with your ERP, there's things that work with your Salesforce, et cetera. Find the problem that you're really trying to fix and then start thinking about how you go to it. Where I see companies fail all the time is they just think, oh, you know, they read a blog, heard a cool podcast or whatever, and thought that, oh, I need CLM. I want some of that. But what is it? It's like going to a restaurant and just ordering food. No, you order what you want. I want a pizza.
Right.
Right.
Just give me what comes out.
Right. So, Craig, like, could you give us like any example on your experience? Like, what happens like when a company with no, like I told you, like no good contract management process, they will like to work with you, right? So we have a mess with our contracts. How it works? Like, what would be like the process? Do you need to do any kind of I don't know, like audit? Is there any stakeholders that you think are important to be involved of this process? Like, can you give us just like a walkthrough on how this work?
Yeah, no. So I mean, whether it's us or, you know, even want to diagnose yourself, right? I would suggest if a company wants, you know, always happy to work with others. But, you know, I think the key is just, you know, going through, right? You know, walk me through a contract. You know, who's using it, right? And first, you got to take multiple perspectives. So is the contract drafting? Let's use a common one, right? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the problem? And you say the lawyers will say, well, look, you know, the business has ridiculous requirements. They don't come to us. They come to us all on Friday, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, they don't appreciate or they don't understand that we have standards and we can't, you know, we have to escalate this. But then you have to ask the other perspective because you're trying to solve a problem and no one's completely wrong. No one's completely right. So ask the salespeople, let's say, right? You know, what's going on here? Like, well, we don't understand why this takes to take so long, right? It looks like a 10-page document. Why can't we use the other company's documents? Why do we have to be this? So just understand the perspectives about what it is, we'll start to see, well, gee, maybe this is a communication issue, right? No one knows that we have these standards that, you know, it's net 30, net 45. We have, you know, these 10 golden rules of things that we can't change in our contract. Maybe it's workflow. Maybe it's, you know, you're doing things that, you know, everything comes into the legal department sort of like a dump truck. It just gets backed up and dropped on them as opposed to being routed the right way. Because, I mean, look, using a 20-year experienced lawyer to review an NDA is a waste of time. There's no right. NDA worth that. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it's going through the process and seeing from different perspectives, you know, where the challenges are, and then sort of saying, well, look, well, if, and then it's the best game in the world. Well, what if I change this, right? What if I were to tell you that, you know, the legal department doesn't, as long as you sign this form NDA, which we've now simplified down to one page, right? Or someone has created the one NDA. Hey, great idea. As long as they do this, right, you don't need to talk to legal whatsoever. Okay, great. Now we've taken the volume down the lawyers so they don't feel so stressed. They can work on things that make more sense for them. That's one step. And the business feels empowered. Well, why don't we go further than just the NDA? Why don't we go into, all right, if you're buying it on our template, you can do any contract up to, you know, 10,000 if you only change these three clauses. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now we can start whittling away and you can start building trust so that way the salespeople don't look at the lawyers as deal killers, and the lawyers don't look at the salespeople as weekend killers. So that way they can start, you know, finding ways that, you know, actually solve the problem. Hey, magical thing, right? In all human conflict, talking to each other and understanding perspectives works. It's the same right. thing with problem solving here. That's what we would do. Right. That's, you know, what my team does. That's what lots of teams do and or companies do themselves. Just look at the problem and start challenging and being open to the idea that, hey, just because this is the way it's been done, it doesn't always have to be. You know, one of the things we find companies do when they say, oh, yeah, we have standards. We'll go to them and say, okay, let me see your contracting standards and let me see the last 30 contracts you've signed, you know, based on these standards. And then we'll do an analysis with some AI saying, well, look, actually you say, you know, you have this standard here that it's, I'll use net 30, you know, as your payment term. Oversimplifying, I know people, right? Things are more complicated right. than that. But then 85% of the time you're signing up to net 60. Well, that's your real standard, right? Yeah. This is a theoretical standard you have over here that someone wrote at a time that made sense. But let's look at the real facts about what you're doing and maybe come to something, you know, closer to what the industry will do. I mean, there's a whole idea in contracting that, like, you know, if you're at 10 and I'm at 1, but we know we're going to end up at 5.
Right.
Why do we have to do this ping-ponging of, you know, 2, 8, you know, 3, 7, 5, you know, like, let's just get to something that makes sense quicker. So I think that's, you know, those are the things I'd suggest anyone does. And that's what we would do is just start mapping out the process. You don't need to be an expert in Visio to just understand, you know, hey, how's a contract come? Because you have a process, whether you know it or not. Mm-hmm. It could be awful, but, you know, there is a process. Something is being done, right? How's a contract come in? Well, does, you know, is email the way or is there something else we can do better? You know, when they do it, are they marking it up based on standards that are, you know, partner friendly, or are they, you know, things written in the 1800s that make no sense today? You know, I looked at a company 2 years ago that still had Y2K clauses in their contracts. You know, and you know, like, you know, and I showed it to them. They're like, oh, well, it's been there, you know, because, well, that's another side is that, you know, contracts are Frankenstein documents.
Yeah.
People, you know, rather than actually making it better, you know, I guarantee this happened in the last year. Someone said, oh, we need a better force majeure clause. So rather than changing the way their contract works, they just slapped on a new amendment to just make it bigger and more clunky that it doesn't make sense. So I know I'm babbling a bit, but I would say that, you know, look at what you're doing, question what you're doing, and then try to change where you are and get, you know, just be open.
Yeah. No, I think those are some great tips. And I think that that gives, you know, folks, no matter where they are in this process, whether they already have a tool in place or are looking for their first one, you know, being able to take a step back and understanding that that should be the beginning of your process at any point in time. If you think that the tools and the processes that are in place are not cutting it and you need to kind of redesign things or take a look at, you know, another application. So Craig, you know, working with all these companies, you know, that are out there and either, you know, are looking for their first contract tool or maybe already have something in place. And again, like I said, you know, they don't think it's cutting it anymore. I mean, how often do you see organizations with something in place that are ripping and replacing?
That's a good question. Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of companies that still, like, they'll come out and they'll try to rip and replace.
Yeah.
But it's akin to someone saying, well, look, you know, I think I need a new car, right? You know, I need to go faster. And then you go to their house and see that they have, you know, a Maserati, you know,
right,
a Ford, you know, Ford Bronco and other things. Well, you know, you have cars, right? Oh, but I want this type of car. Well, what you have can do this if you use it correctly. So I think that's why a lot of companies say, well, like, you know, I had one, you know, company that said to me, like, oh, we think we need, you know, CLM, you know, because of a document management issue. Okay, mm-hmm. Fair enough. And I said, well, what tools do you have laying around? You know, what are you using now? Well, we have, you know, we have Salesforce, we have Teams, we have SharePoint. I go, well, you realize all three of those things could be used to solve the problem you think you have. So, you know, I think if there's a rip and replace, it's sometimes done just because they're not using what they have, and they had a bad innovation in the first place, so no one got trained on how to use it. So human nature, people go back to pens and paper and work around the tool. You do see market, it's very, I mean, there are some people starting to realize, and hey, you know what, we got this tool, we used it, we've outgrown it.
Yeah,
you know, we're a bigger company now. We do want to be more digital. Maybe it only just did document retention and some basic reminders, and now we're ready. You know, we think we've gone up the maturity ladder that we're ready to start using, you know, true workflow, actually get lawyers to use a, wait for it, platform as opposed to emails. So, you know, there are those who maybe, you know, augment, but, you know, the true ripper in place is, you know, gee, why are you doing that?
Yeah. 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 And I guess, well, you know, when I said that, maybe I was thinking more along the lines of, you know, outgrowing something. I think often we see, especially when we're, you know, in our sales cycle and being that, you know, AgileOpt is so robust, you know, it is sometimes overkill for a lot of the organizations that we're working with. But, you know, I think it's interesting to think about some of the tools that we're competing against, and are you going to outgrow them? If not, that's fantastic. You're going to save a lot of money. You probably don't need something this complex, but, you know, in a year to 3 years, are you going to be outgrowing this? And are you going to be wanting something that's more robust? And I think that's something that folks need to think about. So that's kind of where that question
is. No, that's very quick. Because I mean, look, you want to get on the digital highway, right? You don't want to get in the digital cul-de-sac, right?
Right.
But you got to understand, like, sort of like where, you know, what's your company, like, what's the problem you're trying to solve, right? You know, if you know your company, right, and just the way it is, it's not really digitally native. You just want people to have, you know, good document retention, keep all my templates in one place, maybe some reminders when things are doing there. There's lots of tools that do that. If that's really what you're going to do, you'll probably not, you know, you're not ready to outgrow. But if you are something that, you know, you are going to transform and you are going to be expanding, then you want something that can do that and XYZ, right? More things down the road. Where you sometimes have the problem is companies think, you know, I want to be an NBA player. So I need to make sure I have my agent and, you know, everything else set up. Now we go, you're 10 years old and you don't know how to play basketball yet. Maybe learn those things first and then get to the place and use the tool that makes sense now.
Right.
That can grow, but don't go and buy something that you'll never use. Like, I don't think people are using blockchain too much anymore.
Exactly. So, Craig, you also said that one of the first steps that you got to do before starting an implementation process of a good contract management, it's to determine your goals, right? But one of the things that these types of goals, such as transparency when a highly regulated company, or speed for somebody who would just want to shorten their turnover time for their contracts, it's a little bit, let's call it subjective, right? And it's very hard to monetize. Like, how, in your experience, how can you calculate the ROI of a contract management process or consulting for a company?
Yeah. So, I mean, it depends on the process. I give a lawyer answer, but right. If you're thinking about, you know, pre-award, right, it's the basic, you know, one is like, well, can I handle more contracts faster, you know, with less people, or with my same people, but scale up and do more, right? So that's the benefit is that, look, I have a team of 100 people to do, you know, 1,000 contracts a month, I want to get to 2,000 contracts a month because I'm a growing business, but I don't want to hire another 100 people. So I want to, I want to put a tool in and only hire four or keep the same number, right? So the business case is that, but that's sort of looking just at the cost of doing something. A lot of times the ROI can be how fast are you closing deals, right? How fast, particularly if you're in a sales situation, right? How fast is money in the door? Because cash is king, right? If I have a contract in time right now, and you got to measure it, right? That takes, it takes me 6 months to close the deal. If I have volume, if I can go from 6 months to 1 month, right? That's five, that means I can close more deals in the year. That's more revenue. That's faster to revenue in there. Classic one, you see a lot of pharmaceutical companies doing this right now, is realizing that, I think we all appreciate clinical trials now. I think we've all been really educated on that the last 2 years. And patents are monopolies, particularly in the US, right? You have a limited amount of time to commercialize something. Well, do you want to waste time contracting? If I can cut my time down from 6 months to 1 month, right? That means I've now made that patent more valuable to me. I've gained 5 months of monopoly. And that's more than the cost of a few extra FTEs that reduced. So you got to think outside and not just, a lot of times people put the business case out there thinking, well, I'll reduce the number of lawyers, or I'll keep the same number of lawyers in there. That is a business case, and it does matter. Or I'll move my lawyers from New York to Utah or India or whatever. And right. There's a business case for that too. Nothing against Utah or India, lovely places. And that's just thinking of the closed box business case. What you really want to think about is what's the impact on the business. If this is faster, what will do this? That's the pre. On the post, the business case is typically, the World CC has the classic thing of 9.2% of annual contract volume, is wasted due to poor, management. And where that is, it's like dumb stuff like, evergreen contracts that automatically renew, people fail to actually terminate them, right? Or, with a heavy services contract, you end up paying for something twice. You pay for software licenses twice, or you pay for a service twice because you're not checking the scope. So what we tell companies, just to be honest, right, is that, look, 9.2% is the average of where you're losing, but think of your volume. There's probably about 1 to 2% that you can really achieve, because you'll never get perfect, right? If anyone's telling you you're going to get perfect on something, they're lying to you or trying to sell you something. But if you can just move the needle a bit, right, and close out some of these little things, like to make sure you're paying the right price for something, make sure you're getting the right discount, make sure that you're terminating contracts you should terminate. All these little things as a system, right, you can probably, you can save 1 to 2%. There's real, there's real case studies out there. They're out, happy to talk to anyone about it, but there's companies really do actually get this. And it's not just, seatbelts. The business case for a seatbelt is, well, if you don't have one, it's bad. But the counter argument to a seatbelt is, well, I don't get into accidents. I drive kind of slowly, and I've been driving for 20 years. I never got into an accident. Luck is not a strategy. So please everyone wear seatbelts. But same thing with contract management. Luck is not a strategy. You probably have lost money. You just didn't realize you lost money. You didn't realize it was a contract issue that, you know, you lost money. You thought it was Jenkins and procurement. No. It wasn't Jenkins' fault. Maybe it was. But, you know, it was probably because you weren't following through on what your suppliers were doing. You weren't checking to make sure that, you know, you weren't overpaying for things because, like I said, there's tons of paper out there and no one's checking it. If no one's checking it, you may get double billed. I hope that helps in terms of just, you know, putting a little, some numbers on top of it.
No, I definitely think it does. And I think that the, you know, the tangibles versus the non-tangibles and people need to be aware of both things and thinking outside the box, like you said, for things that show value and show that, you know, you're going to be getting some bang for your buck out of these types of tools more so than, you know, what we typically find. And I think another thing to think about is, you know, how is this going to help your customers? What is it going to allow them to do faster? That's something else that really isn't talked about and discussed. So just think about that. And Craig, this has been awesome. I know we've been chatting for a while here. We probably could sit here for another 45 minutes, but we try to keep these things a little bit shorter. So I just want to thank you for coming on. And the new question we've been asking some of our guests is, if you could recommend one person to come on the show and chat with us, has anybody come to mind?
Ooh, one person to come on the show. Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, Kevin Feige, because I just really want to know what's going on in Marvel. But that's a totally different question. I mean, look, you should talk to Alistair Maiden. Yeah, if you talk to him yet, he's a good guy to talk to. I mean, who else is good? You talk to Emily Foges. Well, I've given some people from Deloitte, but yeah. I think there's a ton of, the good thing is there's lots of great folks working in this space. You guys are great in it too. And it's, thank you guys for, you know, waving the flag for contracts. As hopefully you can tell, I'm very passionate about them. It's great to see that people are caring about them. So thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Craig, and if folks want to connect with you, where's the best place to do that? Is that LinkedIn or somewhere else?
LinkedIn or Twitter. You know, follow me, you know, Craig J. Conti. You can search me in any search engines. I'm available pretty much there. You can get to my Deloitte site and please feel free to ask me a question. You know, we all work together.
All right. Well, thanks, Craig. We really appreciate you coming on. Everybody, if you've made it this far into this episode or a couple of episodes, we'd love to have you leave a review, comment, pass it along to somebody else that deals with contracts on a daily basis. Hopefully you find this as helpful as others do. So thanks for joining, and we look forward to having you on the next episode.
Thank you, Craig.
Thank you, guys.